The Majority Report, where the truth comes to party. BS need not apply. BS tried to apply, but we rejected its application. The left just got a little bit louder on The Majority Report.
It is Wednesday, February 16th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the program. Today on the program, Heather Hulbert from the National Security Network will give us an update on Egypt, what we can expect in that region, what we can expect in Egypt, and a look back now that the dust has settled, maybe. I don't know if it's totally settled. We've got a great program for you. I've got a lot of news today, which we will get to in a minute. You know, I was going, I don't, is the Sammy Cam working?
It will be. You met.
Okay.
2 minutes.
Sammy Cam will be working a little bit later. And we apologize yesterday for our server problems. We're in the midst of migrating to two different servers, and between Marin and showing up on the show and tweeting about it, and Glenn Greenwald linking back to the show page because of the transcript of his interview from the other day. You know, we're used to having our live show is not, you know, we don't have thousands of people who watch the live show. It's closer to hundreds or thousand, maybe thousands occasionally. But we're not used to getting thousands upon thousands of people coming to the website at the same time. And but we anticipated that, and we were migrating to separate servers. We just didn't get there in time because we are also in the midst of creating a members-only site. You can't see it, but the members-only site is actually there on the page. The reason why you cannot see it is either because A, well, I should say not either. It's A, because you may not be a member. You may not have joined yet. And B, if you have joined, we haven't given you the secret code that you need to see it. But we will be sending out that email to all members within the next day or two, which means that by Friday, we will have sequestered the second half of the show, the back end, the flip side, the members-only section of the show. So if you want to become a member, now is the time to do it. Now, of course, you can do it next week. But do you want to really miss the back end of that first show or the second show because you were too lazy? This is my point. Stop being lazy. I know there are thousands upon thousands of you who listen to the show on a daily basis, and you're not members. I don't need all of you to become members. Could use most of you becoming members. If most of you became members in the next couple of days, you would see a marked improvement in the show. In fact, we'd probably hire a better host. make sure you become a member because we're going to be sequestering this week. Also, you can always go to Just Coffee at justcoffee.coop. Put in the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Donate your Twitter account. You will notice now if you go to the majority.fm, the MR book and DVD shop, there is a button, a crudely constructed button by myself, where you can hit that button and it will take you to a link, an Amazon link. And if you bookmark that link, you can always go there and buy stuff through Amazon. You won't even know the difference. The only difference will be that you'll be supporting the show because we get a little commish on that. Don't forget, I'll be doing Ring of Fire this weekend. Bobby Papp and I had quite a heated conversation yesterday. Well, the show will be fun this weekend. So check that out at ringoffireradio.com. And let's jump right in. Didn't get to as much news yesterday as I wanted to because of our guests, multiple guests. But surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
Curveball admits that weapons of mass destruction lies were that, just lies, that triggered the Iraq war. Now, you know what? It wasn't these guys' lies that triggered the Iraq war. First of all, you have an agent or an informant that you call Curveball. Curveball was turned away by nearly every single agency except for a small Iraq defense study group in the basement of the White House. Fife and all of those neocons, they said, we found a guy who will say there's weapons of mass destruction. That's basically what the story was. He was an Iraqi defector who, of course, hadn't been there, I think, for 6 years in Iraq. Or really 8 years by the time we made the decision to attack. Well, let me rephrase that. The decision to attack Iraq probably happened sometime in 2000 or 2001. I mean, maybe it was made before that, but I don't think the Bush administration felt they had the ability to do it. And by Bush administration, of course, I'm talking about Dick Cheney. And it's more than likely, certainly we know that in his energy task force meetings in the summer of 2001, they were already carving up Iraq. Now, maybe they were just prescient. Maybe Dick Cheney just simply knew eventually we'll get there. And that's probably what it was. If we'll get there one way or another. So this is good to get this on paper now so we're ready. And when Curveball came through the door, I think he was just walking around for years saying this stuff. He had been rejected by the Clinton administration, been rejected by most agencies, even in the Bush administration. But finally, they found their guy that could hang their tent pole on. Rafid Ahmad Alwan al-Janabi, codenamed Curveball by German and American intelligence officials, told The Guardian the other day that he fabricated tales of mobile bioweapons trucks and clandestine factories in an attempt to bring down the Saddam Hussein regime. But do not for a moment believe that his claiming there were mobile machines, mobile weapons labs, is relevant to this story in any significant way. Why? Because as Oliver Willis reminds us, Donald Rumsfeld, Infinity Radio interview, May 31st, 2003, we have teams of people that are out looking. They've investigated a number of sites, and within the last week or two, they have in fact captured and have in custody two of the mobile trailers that Secretary Powell talked about at the United Nations as being biological weapons laboratories. That, ladies and gentlemen, was a total lie.
Surprise, surprise.
Do you need some charlatan named Curveball to hang your lie upon when you're willing to lie like this? No, of course not. Paul Wolfowitz, same day. Is it an embarrassment to people on the other side? That would be people like you and I who are against the invasion of Iraq, particularly at a time when we had weapons inspectors on the ground saying, hey, we've been here for months. We can't find anything. Is it embarrassment to people on the other side that we've discovered these biological production vans, which the defector told us about? That, ladies and gentlemen, was a total lie.
Surprise, surprise.
When Colin Powell got up in front of the world for domestic consumption and held up a little vial of talcum powder, that was a total lie.
Surprise, surprise.
His pictures of mobile laboratories, which ended up being nothing more than practically ice cream trucks, that was a total lie.
Surprise, surprise.
And on and on and on. So you don't need a guy that is so lacking in credibility that he's referred to as Curveball to justify an invasion in Iraq when you have top U.S. government officials willing to lie. And of course, what added What added to the environment and the series of lies? We heard they have weapons of mass destruction. We have this guy Curveball. We've tortured a guy named Al-Labi. We tortured him for an extended period of time. He didn't tell us anything. And so then what we did is we tortured him more, and then we sent him to Suleiman in Egypt, where they hooked his testicles up to battery cables. Surprise, surprise!
Surprise, surprise!
He tells us exactly what we were looking for. What else created this environment where we would go to war in Iraq? Does anybody remember anthrax? Do you remember that just about the time you had guys like Rumsfeld and
only God, no other king.
Ashcroft. Talking about the dangers of weaponized anthrax that that Iraq was working upon. The one tiny vial held in the hand of Colin Powell. If he drops that in New York, in the UN building, we're all going to be shut down. Well, before he brought his prop vial of anthrax, there were actual anthrax attacks, which somehow could never get solved until, of course, the FBI last year announced that we have solved the anthrax puzzle. It was a Fort Detrick scientist named Bruce Ivins. He was developing an anthrax program and wanted to show how important it was to develop by sending this anthrax out. Except, well, it turns out, and as the FBI was closing in on him, he had to commit suicide to avoid prosecution. Except,
hey, what happened?
A report released from the National Research Council yesterday questioned the strength of the genetic testing that the government said had conclusively linked anthrax-infested letters that killed five people to a flask of lethal bacteria belonging to said Bruce Ivins. The Justice Department closed the probe last year after concluding that Ivins, an Army researcher who killed himself in 2008 as investigators closed in on him, had single-handedly prepared and mailed the anthrax spores terrorizing the nation just after the September 11, 2001 attacks. This from the Washington Post. For years, the FBI has claimed scientific evidence for its conclusions that anthrax spores in the letters were linked to the anthrax bacteria found in Ivins' lab, says Charles E. Grassley, senator from Iowa. The report shows that the science is not necessarily a slam dunk. There are no more excuses for avoiding an independent review. Why would we not have an independent review? You'll remember these spore-laden letters were sent to news media and U.S. Senate offices in September and October, sickened 17 people and triggered a massive FBI probe that actually named a person of interest that was never involved. So we have the FBI screwing up on this or not screwing up on this, but what we do know is that mysteriously, it ended after we made the decision to go to Iraq. We know that it was used and exploited in the news media by people like Brian Ross, who spent apparently an entire week or so screeching to the country, as Glenn Greenwald says, that bentonite had been found in the anthrax, and this agent was a telltale sign of Iraq's chemical weapons program. Of course, they found nothing to suggest that this anthrax had been in any way weaponized. And George Bush's Let's Go to Iraq campaign featured anthrax over and over and over again. So there you have it, folks. The two tentpole lies, actually three, if you want to include the torture of Al-Labi by Suleiman, have really come home to roost in the past month, haven't they? It's wonderful how karma will do that. Of course, don't look back, folks. It's not important. Go back to sleep. Go back to sleep. You're getting sleepy. So sleepy. Soon Dancing with Stars will be on, and all will be well. Rest your pretty heads. Enjoy that 9.8 unemployment. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Heather Hurlburt on the latest developments in and about Egypt. We'll be right back. We are back on the phone. Pleasure to welcome to the program once again Heather Hurlburt. She's the executive director of the National Security Network. From 95 to 2001, she served in the Clinton administration as special assistant and speechwriter to the president, speechwriter for Secretaries of State Albright and Christopher, and a member of the State Department's policy planning staff. Welcome to the program, Heather.
Thanks, Sam. It's great to be with you again. Better news than last time.
Yes, definitely. And it really was an amazing 3 weeks there. And so let's just give us an update about where we are at this point. The military is now in charge.
The military is in charge. Mubarak is gone in seclusion and supposedly very ill. You can make of that what you will. The armed forces have said they want to have a transition to elections and a democratic government, have suspended the Constitution, which is a mixed bag because it was a constitution designed to consolidate Mubarak's hold on power, and announced a constitutional reform committee to change part or all of the Constitution. And the constitutional reform committee includes secular and Islamist folks. It includes an ex-judge, longtime folks, and also figures from the protest movement. So the thing that's kind of funny about that is that they told the committee to make all of its changes in just 10 days, which, you know, Americans, even the Constitutional Convention took a considerably longer than that to write the U.S. Constitution. So that's a challenging thing. But the military clearly wants to demonstrate to civilians that things are changing. So that's where we are.
So are they actually going ahead and they're changing this within 10 days? So how many more days left do they have? There's a lot of people are pulling all-nighters, I would assume.
I think yesterday was day one of 10. So as I understand it, what they may do is just change some articles, or they may create an interim constitution which would govern the country while elections are held, and then after that convene a sort of a more classically representative and long-term process to write a new constitution.
And the military had asked for, I guess, had demanded all labor protests to halt, et cetera, et cetera. It didn't seem to hold the first couple of days. What is the status of that now?
Well, I gather just in the last 24 hours, there's actually been an enormous protest at an industrial facility. And I think what you're seeing is that that actually Egyptian workers and unions got into the game a little bit late, but are now very determined not to go back home. And the young people who were sort of coordinating the original Tahrir Square effort are, as I understand it, sort of deliberately trying to maintain calm, send most people back home and maintain a sense of order, but also very much have the military on notice, or want to have the military on notice, that they can bring out large disruptive strikes again anytime they want.
So this is sort of walking a little bit of a tightrope here, both to show that they're happy with what the progress is headed, but also to make sure that they're holding the military accountable.
Yes, and I think the other piece of the tightrope that they're walking is not to alienate the rest of Egyptian society. So how to show that all of this is moving in a good direction and not a destabilizing direction. So I think everyone there is walking a bit of a tightrope, the protesters and the military alike.
Do you think that this was how would you categorize this or characterize this? Is it have we seen a popular revolution, or have we seen a military coup, or is this some type of hybrid?
I would call it a hybrid in that you had a popular revolution, but the tool sort of the tool for step one of the popular revolution was the military coup. And actually, that's sort of more common in the history of revolution than you think of. You know, we don't maybe in the U.S. so much associate it with armies. But again, if you think of what were the decisive moments in Eastern Europe in the 90s when it became clear that the Soviet army wasn't going to intervene and the national armies wouldn't shoot their citizens, what was the decisive moment in Tiananmen Square in 1989 when it became clear that the Chinese army would shoot its own citizens? Mm-hmm. So that's actually that hybrid is maybe more the standard model than, you know, maybe the picture that we have in our heads about revolutions happening with people putting daisies in gun barrels.
Right. And the Egyptian military has a slightly different character than we would necessarily perceive, because it wasn't as aligned with the regime as the internal police force was.
Right. And there's two other things to remember about the military. It had never fired shots at Egyptian civilians, one. Two, it's a tremendous source of national pride for a country that sees itself as a real leader of the Muslim and Arab worlds, and that basically Mubarak and Sadat and Nasser, their sort of greatest successes were all seen as associated with the army in some ways. So the army has always been, or not always, but in the post-monarchy era, has always been the sort of legitimator of who's in power. And remember, it's a conscript army. So at the lower levels, it's full of folks whose families are suffering all the same hardships as everyone else in Egypt and who aren't benefiting at all from the system that Mubarak had in place. So the army leadership itself had to make that calculation of where were the rank-and-file soldiers, and it became pretty clear that the rank-and-file soldiers were where rank-and-file Egyptians were.
So let me ask you that. I know that you hang around with a lot of the people in the U.S. government who are paid and whose job it is to think about these things and anticipate these things and reflect upon these types of events. Is there was there a measure of surprise? I mean, I don't remember when we were talking if we were as sort of conscious of just how much the youth movement played in this and how much Facebook, frankly, played in this entire revolution.
Well, the first thing is I definitely know a couple of people who are sort of chortling and saying, I told you so. And these are the people who have been maybe the kind of lonely apostles of the importance of Facebook and new media in international politics. And maybe some of us who are older and a little bit better established tend to kind of pat them on the head or roll our eyes at them a little bit. And those folks are definitely walking in the halls of the State Department sort of laughing at chortling right now. So, you know, there were people inside who understood this very well. You know, I think the other piece that is really unfortunate is that there was a group of folks who understood very well what democracy activists and young people in Egypt were planning and trying to do. But unfortunately, because a lot of those programs had been actually defunded by the administration in the last year and a half, maybe they didn't have the broader audience that they should have had. So I think there's a sector of people going around town who are, you know, either saying, I told you so, or feeling pretty proud because they helped provide some of the money and support that helped this group of Egyptians, to whom all the credit belongs, really, but helped them kind of get themselves together, helped them make contact with people like the folks who spearheaded the Otpor movement in Serbia that got rid of Milosevic in a similarly nonviolent fashion. Gosh, what is that, more than 10 years ago now? But as I say, I think they weren't as connected as they might have been with the people who were doing the sort of day-to-day politics where, frankly, things were going along as they always had.
That's interesting. And so and I noticed there was a movement. There was an announcement by the administration that they were going to sort of up those measures in terms of like showing NGO workers in foreign countries with such type of regimes how to secure their email or how to use IP anonymizers that we now currently are sort of weirdly, and I'm going to talk about this after if you're gone, but we're advocating certain measures in foreign countries about avoiding regimes from cracking down the internet while domestically imposing them in some weird way, if that makes sense.
No, it makes complete sense. I thought Secretary Clinton's speech was beautiful on sort of the new things that they were going to do and move ahead on the internet side. And it did raise some uncomfortable resonances for me as well. And I think this is just something that Americans are going to have to continue to struggle with as we think about the role of government in our society and in every society.
We're going to actually have to look to dissidents from foreign countries on ways to circumvent our government firewalls when it's time for us to have an issue.
Well, you know, another way of thinking about it is that we're not always as good as applying at home our understanding about the value of free and open dialogue as we are at applying it to other societies.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, everybody's pretty good at saying do as we do. Do as we say, not as we do. Now, there's another element about this, too, that I thought was very fascinating, was that Al Jazeera's role in this. I mean, there was a time where there was no Al Jazeera, and there was a time where and it wasn't that long ago. And it was hugely important, I think, for keeping us informed in America. But it was far more important, I would imagine, in terms of circulating information back into Egypt, where you had state-run media outlets that wouldn't have shown what Al Jazeera was showing and wouldn't have given access to Egyptians on the ground. And I imagine they had an ability to operate in that country in a way that American or Western journalists wouldn't have had. Well, how important is the development of Al Jazeera to something like this?
So I think the first thing to say is that it was clearly so important that the Egyptian government went out of its way to shut Al Jazeera down in Egypt, which they did not do for, you know, sort of the big Western broadcasters. But that's how important they viewed Al Jazeera's role as. The other thing that I think is worth saying to American audiences who may not, I mean, I spent a fair amount of time streaming Al Jazeera on my computer, and some media critics commented that the Al Jazeera team was so conscious of how important this was for them that they were held to a much higher standard of journalistic objectivity than Western reporters were, who were constantly expressing sympathy for the protesters,
right,
and, you know, broadcasting in a very folksy style, where one of the Al Jazeera lead reporters is himself Egyptian and never said one word one way or the other about the protests until it was all over, at which point one of the anchors finally said to him, "Would you like to say something about what this means for you personally?" But the guy had reported on it for 3 weeks and basically never said a thing. And so Al Jazeera really very consciously used this as a kind of coming out party for itself. Frankly, modeling itself on some of the ways that CNN used the first Gulf War as part of its coming out as a globally invaluable resource.
And what are the implications for Al Jazeera? And this is a good time just to quickly move into the implications for the rest of the region. I mean, we have now we have protests in Iran the other day. We have protests in Yemen, Algiers. We have changes with the Palestinian Authority instituting some reforms.
Just today you have protests in Iran at a funeral for killed protesters, protest in Bahrain at a funeral for killed protesters, a big protest in Libya today, apparently. So, I've been saying to people, if you think about this in terms, if you compare it to what we remember about the revolutions in the former Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, you know, it feels like 1989, but we're only in 1987 or 1988, which is to say that we could still see a lot more change. And frankly, in a lot more unpredictable ways. And Egypt had a lot of advantages that enabled it to go off the way it did. And there's just each place is going to be very different. And you're going to see, you know, the one commonality is that you're going to see bumpiness and protests and anger. And in some places, that may lead to other sort of big changes in government. In other places like Iran, it's going to lead to more violent crackdown. Now, there's a regime which has no compunction in using all of the tools of force against its own citizens and is, you know, shows every indication of being willing to keep doing so. And then you have other places where rulers are either trying to buy off the populace or there are sort of cosmetic changes in government. So my prediction is you're going to get one or two of everything, and it's really going to remake a set of assumptions we have about dealing with the Middle East.
How focused should we be on Bahrain? My understanding is that there's been protests there, and Bahrain is a the site of a big U.S. Naval base, I guess. And There seems to be, it suspended its parliament the other day, yesterday, I guess. How key is something like what's happening in Bahrain?
You know, what's happening in Bahrain still looks to me as if it can be resolved successfully without major, you know, it doesn't have to affect the naval base, but the primary demand is for the firing of the prime minister, you know. That's different from asking the royal family to step down, anything like that. Mm-hmm. So although this business of shooting protesters and then more violence at funerals of protesters is very worrying, Bahrain by itself doesn't look like an earthquake on the level of Egypt, although, you know, Lord knows, I could be on your show eating crow in 2 weeks.
Well, we won't. We don't serve any crow here. We have very short memories. Now, one last thing. Apparently, CBS Radio is reporting that Iranian warships are headed to the Suez Canal, and that Israel has gone on alert. Now, I don't know how. I heard this from Dorsey, and Dorsey is one of our producers, and he's not exactly the most reliable person. But what would that be about? If I don't want to. I mean, if you know nothing about it, you know nothing about it. But what would that might signal?
Well, if it's true, and I hasten to add that I have no idea whether it is or not. I mean, the first things you think of are the Iranians are trying to take advantage of confusion and test the situation.
Uh-huh.
There is this sort of historic jostling, quite apart from who's in power where, between the Iranians and the Egyptians as to sort of who is the leader of that part of the world. And so you could see some elements of the Iranian government seeing this as a great opportunity to both discomfit the new Egyptian government and put a lot of pressure on the Israelis. You could see it as some elements in the Iranian government trying to take attention away from what's going on at home.
Right.
You know, it may... you know, anybody can send their warships anywhere. And again, you could see them just deciding that this is a good moment to have an intimidating little cruise.
And I would imagine, too, that it works domestically, because if they create some type of conflict that is becomes a sort of a national conflict with a national enemy like Israel, it must help in some ways domestically to quell any type of unrest there.
I mean, it works with one segment of the Iranian society and not with another.
Uh-huh.
You know, that you do now have a pretty significant stratum of Iranian society that is just – that will not be reconciled to this regime and that sees through this kind of activity. On the other hand, there's another segment that is still very, you know, susceptible to these kinds of nationalist appeals, and that's why they're using it. I mean, it's worrying because obviously the opportunities for miscalculation and overreaction are so great.
Right. We have people just like that in this country. We call them the Tea Party, I think.
No. No, was it your show where the gentleman called in and was complaining that we were lionizing the Egyptian protesters but not lionizing the Tea Party?
No, it wasn't my show, but I only wish it were. I can tell you I wish it were. I would love a phone call like that. Heather Hurlburt, Executive President, I'm sorry, Executive Director.
But you can promote me to President anytime.
Congratulations, we promoted you here. When you show up here, you are the President of the National Security Network. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Okay, we got to take a break. We will be right back, and a little more news, and then we'll go to the flip side. So I had mentioned it briefly with Heather Hurlburt, and I want to just, draw this out just a little bit. Days after Facebook, this is reported Monday. The past 2 days have been very difficult for me because first I had to deal with Valentine's Day, which, of course, is Nikki's birthday, and my daughter being ill, and my mother-in-law coming in, and then my wife becoming ill. And the migration of the members' site. So, excuse me if I am a day or two. I lost a day somewhere. The Obama administration plans to announce a new policy on internet freedom designed to help people get around barriers in cyberspace while making it harder for autocratic governments to use the same technology to repress dissent. The State Department plans to finance programs like Circumvention Services, which enable users to evade internet firewalls, and training for human rights workers on how to secure their email from surveillance or wipe incriminating data from cell phones if they are detained by the police. I know why I'm laughing. Because just days earlier, the Obama administration's Justice Department has asserted that the FBI can obtain telephone records of international calls made from U.S. without any formal legal process or court oversight. And, of course, this applies to emails as well. So, on one hand, the Obama administration is saying we're going to train and spend money on teaching people, human rights workers in foreign countries, how to make calls out of their country to presumably the U.S. or some other country without being surveilled by the local authorities. And we're going to teach them how to circumvent firewalls. Now, there's a service that they could use. What is that called again? What's that service, Evan? What's it called?
Tor,
right. Who's that guy? There's that guy. Oh, I know where that guy who developed Tor is. He's probably still at the Seattle airport where our customs officials are making him strip down naked and examining every part of his body and taking any piece of electronic equipment from him. This is stunning. It's just stunning. I mean, it's hilarious and stunning. It's stellarious. It's humming. And apparently, the Justice Department inadvertently revealed that they had asserted that the FBI could do this. The Office of Legal Counsel, which writes, you know, which, as far as I can tell, for the past 12 years now, has simply been like the alibi central. Need to break the law? Need to torture somebody? Need to surveil, spy on your own citizens? Come down. We'll write you a slip. We'll write you a permission slip. I mean, it's literally like the kid who sits in study hall and says, like, what do you need? What do you need? What do you need? You want a hall pass? I'll write you a hall pass. Wait, you want to say that your mom's coming to pick you up because you got a dentist appointment? I got six of those. That's what the OLC, it seems like, has become. It's embarrassment. And I guess McClatchy was looking for a copy of a memo that had to deal with something else. And the OLC accidentally gave them the memo that they sent to the FBI saying, yeah, there's a hole in the Surveillance Act from 78. That says, yeah, you could probably do it. You'd do it. I mean, it's not like there's some foreign country that's going to be sending money to human rights workers in America that's going to teach them how to avoid your surveilling them. We're doing that for the other countries. Unbelievable. Meanwhile, Russ Feingold has launched Progressives United. I think he's going to be on MSNBC tonight talking about this. But Russ Feingold, one of the best senators we've had in my generation, unfortunately lost to a corporate-backed shill who actually went to visit CEO Tom Donahue of the Chamber of Commerce personally to thank him for all his unsolicited support. Unbelievable. Feingold could have done what any member of the Obama administration seems to do. He could have gone to Citigroup. He could have gone to some lobbying firm. He could go like where Chris Dodd, who promised he'd never be a lobbyist, and goes and tries to become, I don't know if he already successfully has become a lobbyist for the film industry. I mean, on and on and on. Feingold, probably in the top bottom five senators in terms of wealth in the Senate when he left, could go and cash in, could make a chunk of change. No, instead he goes to teach law school at Marquette University, writes a book on foreign policy, and decides to launch an organization to combat corporate influence in politics. You know, something tells me a guy named Feingold might appreciate this, but either way, I'm giving him one of these. One of the reasons why Feingold lost, frankly, was that he refused to take money outside spending. He refused to take PAC money, you know, to take, I'm sorry, corporate money. He refused to do any of that. If you were an outside organization and you had a hit ad on Ron Johnson and he saw it, he would demand you take it down, and not like, I'm going to pretend like I want you to take it down. Believe me, I tried. Dorsey, you know this.
Mm-hmm. It was a great ad.
I made an ad. Ron Johnson was a horrible human being. And I was like, look at this ad. Sent an email to those people. Look at this ad. And they were like, no, please don't. What? But it's true. It's all true. We don't allow for outside groups to make ads. We can't control you, but you don't do it. And I was like, oh. And fortunately, you know, I have to admit that if I had the money to put it on Wisconsin television, I may have done it. But I didn't. But that's how much, that's the scruples this guy has. And so he started this, it's called Progressives United, to fight the Citizens United ruling by the Supreme Court. And I don't know. We're going to try and get him on someday. I don't know. Hopefully we can, but I don't know if we can. One place to start if you wanted to fight the Citizens United ruling would be to remind Justice Thomas, which apparently has just come out. Now, you know that Justice Thomas, we're going to go late today, folks, if you don't mind, to give you bonus material. This is material we'll be doing in the members-only section, because that's what I will do. Because I can't do more than an hour, 90 minutes a day right now. It's just too much. Don't have the capacity. Maybe someday, if we get enough members, we'll extend the pre-show by 10 minutes and extend the post-show by 10 minutes. That's the way we'll grow it. So you know that Justice Thomas's wife, Ginny, she who would call Anita Hill years later, I guess 18 years later, 17 years later, 15 years later, to demand an apology. Please apologize for my husband putting a pubic hair on a Coke can and holding it up in front of your face. You just wonder what's going on in that house that comes up 15 years later. Like somebody else sitting, you know, like says, Ginny, I want to tell you something. Clarence tried something like that with me. I'm going to demand an apology from Anita Hill for putting that out there. That's where he got the idea to do it. She received something like $500,000 to $700,000 over the past 4 or 5 years that we know about. That we know about from the Heritage Foundation and Hillsdale College, which is a Heritage Foundation funded right wing college, both of which give money to Limbaugh and Beck and Hannity. I mean, it's just incredibly nefarious. She founded a Tea Party organization. She advocated on behalf of Citizens United ruling. All these things that one would think, hey, if I'm a Supreme Court justice and I care about the institution, because there is no rule. Supreme Court justices make up their own mind as to when they recuse themselves from any case. If they were on a lower court, they all would have had to recuse themselves on all these cases, or they would by this point be impeached as judges. No doubt about it. And he forgot to disclose that they were getting all that money. I guess when the Supreme Court justice thought that he had to disclose the money that his wife was making, it didn't occur to him about that $500,000 he had gotten over the past 5 years, 4 years. It's very easy to forget $500,000. And it's very hard to remember when it says something like, disclose any monies made by your spouse. It's very hard to remember that. Well, apparently, the Supreme Court justice is also very forgetful in that the actual Citizens United Foundation supported his 1991 nomination to the Supreme Court and spent more than $100,000 in 1991 dollars on advertisements attacking opposing senators. That is what we know as a gift in kind. He forgot to report that too, and he forgot to actually say, hey, maybe I shouldn't rule on this case because they spent $100,000 to get me into this job. But Clarence Thomas has no such scruples. And just the other day, the Supreme Court celebrated 5 years since Justice Clarence Thomas spoke during a court argument. It's beyond unprecedented. No justice has ever gone in the past 40 years, an entire term, much less five terms, without speaking at least once during arguments. And you know what I've learned? I've learned over the years, I used to always think like, hey, that guy's very quiet. He must be super smart. Like, didn't you think that about our last owner at Air America? He doesn't say much. He must be really, oh, I love the way this guy plays it so close to the vest. And the thing that I've come to realize is that it's one thing to say very little and have very insightful things to say when you open your mouth. But just saying very little is an indication that they don't know what the fuck they're doing. That's been my experience in life. I always used to give the benefit of doubt. Like, someone was quiet, I was just like, wow, this guy must be really smart. Because I am a big mouth, and I'm always like, blah, 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 blah. And, I mean, I know what I'm talking about when I've read other people's stuff. But in general, I have a natural bias against my own ability to know what I'm talking about. And so when I see someone who doesn't say anything, I assume, oh, they must be totally, totally on top of this. And I realize now, no, they have no idea what's going on. And they just don't open their mouth because they want to look like an idiot. And that's, I think, what we see with Clarence Thomas. All right, now, ladies and gentlemen, it is that time where we will move to the flip side, the members-only section. Of course, if you're listening live, you'll hear it. And, of course, if you're podcasting, you'll also hear it. But not in 3 days. Don't forget, Just Coffee at justcoffee.coop. Donate your Twitter. We've got 100 and... How many people is it now who have donated their Twitter account to us? Well, we've got a lot. 149 donors. You can do it once a week, once a month, or once a day. We never abuse it. We never send out anything that would embarrass you. And it's a big help to us. Also, post stuff on Facebook. You got a Facebook account? Facebook is huge. Tell people about the Majority Report Facebook page. And buy through that Amazon link. Send us guest suggestions. You'll hear from us soon, members. Let's go to the flip side. You can IM me at samcedarshow@g... What am I talking about? That's where you would email me if I was still using that email. You can actually IM me at majorityfm. Ugh, Sam. Get it together. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. You know what we may have to start doing is I may have to start just compiling all the crazy right-wing stories for Friday only. Because, you know, today I was like, you know, and you can see in the Sammy cam, I make a list of all my story collections. Sometimes it's thematic, sometimes it's stories. And I put it there, and I, you know, get a rough idea of what I'm going to do with the show. Rough idea. And and I put it in there. And, you know, today I had, like, one story, and I put, oh, okay, right-wing wing nuts. And then I just kept putting story and story after story after story into that section. That was going to be one or two stories. This is fantastic. And maybe I should just save it for Fridays. So Fridays is like a fun right-wing story day. I don't know. What do you think?
Right. Friday, we got too much stuff going on Fridays.
Birthers. A wonderful poll. Survey released by Public Policy Polling on Tuesday finds that 51% of those likely to vote in a GOP primary believe that Barack Obama was definitely not born in the United States. 51% of Republican primary voters believe are birthers. But then it gets even worse, I think, because only 28% believe that Obama is definitely an American citizen. There's another 21% who are unsure. They could still believe. They're not. I'm not sure. So they're not. So you have on one hand, like, people who are like, I am telling you, he is not an American citizen. And then that's the majority of Republicans who are going to vote in the primary. And then there's another almost quarter who are like, they may have a good argument. I don't know. There's no way to know. There's no way to know. And here's the other point. They posted this question in August of 2009. Okay? 2 years ago. 1.5 years ago. Only 44% of Republicans said they thought Obama was born outside the country. 36% said he was definitely born in the country. You understand that the trend is moving away from this belief. They're getting crazier. And I don't know if this is good news or bad news. It's good news insofar as what is happening is exactly what I predicted 5 years ago, that the Republicans are becoming significantly more marginal, that it is impossible to talk to the Tea Party, the Republican base, and the American people simultaneously. You could see it when Bobby Jindal tried to make his speech after Obama gave his State of the Union address a couple years ago. Jindal ended up looking like a complete nut job because he was trying to talk to the Republican base because he thought he had a future in the Republican Party. You can see it with Michelle Bachmann. It is the perfect metaphor. I will say it again. That moment where Michelle Bachmann was talking directly to the Tea Partiers and looked completely insane to the rest of us because she was looking into the wrong camera was the perfect metaphor for the dilemma any Republican has. You cannot win the Republican nomination without looking insane to the rest of the country. Period. I mean, I guess, you know, there are scenarios like, you know, all the Republicans that gathered at a debate and they didn't invite one of them and a tsunami hits and the entire debate hall gets washed up and there's no time for other people to run, whatever. But highly doubtful. Meanwhile, among the 49% of GOP primary voters who think that Obama was born in the United States or aren't sure, that's just, You have to roll in the unsure people. Who, remember, they're trending to becoming more and more sure that he's an alien. Romney's the first choice to be the nominee by a good amount, getting 23% to 16% for Huckabee, and 11% for Sarah Palin, 10% for Newt Gingrich. But with the birther majority, he's in distant fourth place at 11%. In other words, the 51% who are birthers hate Mitt Romney. Hate Mitt Romney. Hate him. And that's before that other 49% is reminded that his health care plan, he is quoted as of supporting the individual mandate. Palin has an 83% approval rating. 83% amongst those birthdays. Oh, Lord. Oh, gosh. Now, this is all, like I said, I don't know whether or not to be happy about this. Because the fact that Republicans are so crazy is not the problem that we have, ladies and gentlemen. The problem that we have is that the Democratic Party, maybe not totally, maybe not even halfway, but there is an exponential strength that corporatists have that non-corporatists don't have. So, like I've been saying for a couple of years, the corporatists own 30% of the Democratic Party. What I did not realize was how much more strength a 30% corporate wing has than a 70% non-corporate wing. And it makes sense. It was a blind spot for me. But if you get corporate donations, just give you the example of Steny Hoyer, and we talked about this very early in the program when there was debate as to who would be Nancy Pelosi's number two. Steny Hoyer has such goodwill amongst the entire caucus. And the reason is because he would go into towns where there were challengers, Democratic challengers to Republicans. He would campaign so hard for Democrats, whether they were incumbents or challengers, that he created a lot of good favor. I mean, here he was, the House whip or the House minority number two or three or whatever he was at the time, and coming in would give a real credibility, would get some news, local news for these candidates. Now, how could he do this? How could he go in and fundraise and campaign tirelessly for other people? Didn't he have to do so for himself? Well, not as much as most members. And why? Because he's from Delaware, and he gets a huge amount of corporate money. And so that corporate money allows him to go around, probably in some type of pack or something like that, that pays for his travel, that helps out these other candidates. He doesn't have as much worry about at home because he's got all this money to roll out a bunch of TV campaigns and whatnot. Whereas if you're, you know, a guy like Russ Feingold, not a perfect example because he's in the Senate, but if you're a guy like, I don't know, Jim McGovern in Massachusetts, and you're not in the pot, you know, corporate interests are not as excited about you because you're a lefty, you're not a corporatist, you got to go raise your money door to door, hitting on the few liberals who are willing to give money to people who don't necessarily represent their corporate interests. We're to the left of them, and it makes it much harder to go out and support other candidates. It's just the way it is. I mean, there's a similar dynamic with this show. You know, the fact is that I'm not making a judgment here, but if I was to do more corporate or broader news quotes, you know, like Justin Bieber is Something. I don't know. What
he's
is he doing?
He's a socialist, apparently.
He is? No, that was a fraud, wasn't it? Or is that real?
No, in Rolling Stone, he said that America's evil healthcare system kills too many people every year. But then he goes on to say that he doesn't really believe in abortion. So, there you go.
Well.
Win some, you lose some.
Cutting it both ways. But my point being that if I was to report on the latest story of Justin Bieber, you know, I would probably get more hits on YouTube, right? Start making some more revenues?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, you'd have to trick people, and then they'd never come back.
What do you mean, to trick people? No, I mean, actually, I'm saying if I actually did real Justin Bieber stories.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Well, you don't think that I have the ability to talk about Justin Bieber?
I think there's a lot of Bieber out there.
Well, all right, well, not Bieber's a bad... whatever.
Dancing with Stars.
Yes.
Whatever it is.
The Kardashians.
You get my point. So, ultimately, what I'm saying is that I don't know if having such crazy Republicans does anything except for embolden corporatist Democrats. Because, you know, I don't want Sarah Palin over Barack Obama. But that doesn't mean that I'm happy with Barack Obama. And you could argue that you're defanging any ability to have any leverage there, but I've seen how that play goes too. And we got 8 years of Bush, and are we any more liberal as a country, or are rulers any more liberal, or are we any less corporatized? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. For me, it comes down to the Supreme Court. We're going to have Matt Stoller on soon, because Stoller and I got into like a little Twitter exchange about this. Let's go to the IMs, ladies and gentlemen. Trip, just letting you know, your super mic is blocking out your face on the Sammy cam, blunting your dramatic visual impacts. You might consider repositioning. Yes, we will. First off, it's designed so you can put it on top of the computer.
I'm not buying that, are you?
No, I guess it isn't. Oh, there you go. Yeah, it is.
It's a little weird.
What's weird about it?
Touch. Coming down about halfway into my screen here now.
What do you need to look at that screen for?
iTunes. It's where I'm running everything off of.
You can't find one song on iTunes? You run four songs during the show, you get that Sammy cam? We got to move that camera anyways. System manager. Yes, I know. I'm signed into two AOL accounts. What's the matter with you? Wait, why does it keep popping up Majority Reporter? This Cedar... Majority FM. Huh. Nefertiti. Sound level is really low today, hard to hear, even with everything turned up to 11.
Huh. All right, I'll get on that.
I updated your button on the store page. I had it on my list of things to do this morning, but you beat me to it. Thank you for updating, Avant. I joined Feingold's site this morning, and now the site is down. I hope that's because so many people went to sign up. Sweet. Tape a half an hour show to release on Saturdays called MR Wingnut Weekends for members only. Just an idea. It's a good idea. I think adding more content right now, though, is probably a steep mountain to climb. We do a lot of content. You know, somebody wrote me the other day, like, you know, and... I've said before, given breaks, working out deals with people who are, well, let's put it this way. If you are too strapped to pay for the post show, email me and we could talk about it. But somebody emailed me and was like, you know, Randy and Tom only charge $50 a month or whatever it is, $60 a month. And they do three-hour shows. Well, I got news. Here's a dirty secret for you, first of all. Do you know what a three-hour radio show is? It is 116 minutes. 114 minutes.
I used to say commercial.
38 minutes an hour is commercial radio. So... 3 times 38, 114 minutes. And we do, on average, 90 minutes. Maybe, usually, you know, sometimes it's more. But I try and keep it to 90 minutes. Sometimes it's, what do you call it? 100 minutes. And this is our only source of revenue, is memberships. We don't have, and, you know, I guess Amazon and Just Coffee. Just Coffee is really our source of coffee. And some revenue, but really, the only real revenue we get comes from members. Now, that may change in the future, in which case, but I'm not locking out anybody who can't afford it. And we have a lot of, it's hard. There's a lot of emails I get that are very, it's sad to read some of the situations that people are in. A lot of medical situations, a lot of disability, a lot of outsourcing of jobs, graphic artists. I got a tip for you kids. Don't go into graphic art. A lot of graphic artists seem to have a tough time of it. Oh, Pluger, that's not nice. Great pick of alternate orientation of the mic here. Yeah, that really is a nice setup. It comes down from above. We're going to do that. That does look so much better.
We've got the boom, don't we?
Yeah. I'm going to put that up today. I'm going to figure that out. God, he looks old in that picture. I'm kidding. Crystal Count. Members only has a certain seedy allure that could help sell it. I recommend a logo photo. Maybe get Janine to give a seductive mascara wink and a keyhole frame, and voila. Everyone will want in. I took the president to his word when he said that he was a reverend right Christian progressive who wasn't born in Kenya. One out of three ain't bad. Yeah. You know what? I love that keyhole idea. I love it. Maybe what we need is a keyhole, an eye behind the keyhole, and the MR logo in the reflection of the eye. Huh?
That's pretty epic.
Yeah.
It is pretty epic. Morella, you have your plateful on Friday with the name drop and all that. Show sounds good on iTunes, says Morella. Heathen Steven, Worcester native, me, becomes Majority Report member. Oh, my gosh. That's going to be a double. Oh, I can't do it like that. I got to shorten that thing. Call post show VIP-er room. VIP-er? Worcester never bred made good marketers. I'm certainly not one. When you say 83% of the birthers, how many people are we talking about? I mean, how many batshit people are there out there? Give me the numbers. Well, I don't know. How many people voted in the last GOP primary? Was it 20-some-odd million? 30 million? Are you looking that up?
Looking that up.
Sam, what does it matter whether we have Obama implementing policies that drive the country into the ground versus Sarah Palin doing it? The end result is the same. We're fucked. Well, I just think that's not... I would say the Supreme Court. You know, I mean, there's other issues, but at the end of the day, the Supreme Court, you know, you can come in and you can change policies 4 years later. You can, after years and years, you can build up regulatory agencies, which is happening. But you put a couple more 50-year-old Scalia types, Alito types, Roberts types in for Ruth Bader Ginsburg or for Breyer. Forget it. My daughter is going to be dealing with their rulings, their new rulings, in her 20s and 30s. That's the only argument I have, which is not to say that the Supreme Court hasn't moved to the right on every single appointee probably in the past 60 years. Every single appointee has been more right than the person, more to the right than the person they replaced. But it still could be the last hope. I mean, this is an argument we're going to have with Stoller. Zach Punk, you were probably in Massachusetts in 94. And remember that race against Kennedy, multiple choice Mitt. I do. I don't see how he wins the nomination, but I hope he does, because I don't see how he wins the presidency either. The one thing I worry about most is Huckabee, just because he's so folksy and pleasant. Did I hear something? Huckabee's not going to run? There was a rumor that he's not going to run because he's got to stick with his Fox job because he's got too much of a mortgage on his house or something like that?
I didn't hear that.
No.
Serving the public.
Narkater, what does the Supreme Court matter if it gets so bad we have an Egyptian-style revolution? You know that would not go well here. Well, look, I mean, there is a big gulf of possibilities between the Supreme Court is important and we have an Egyptian-style revolution in the streets. And I'm not going to bet on a revolution like that. I can maybe hope for it. But, you know, after it comes about, it would be nice to maintain one institution. The Supreme Court may very well be very important in that instance. The Supreme Court may, you know, I can come up with many fantastical scenarios where the Supreme Court rules that the president is actions of declaring a state of emergency or unconstitutional, whatever it is. I mean, you know, come on. You can't tell me that. Well, what if there's an apocalypse? The Supreme Court won't matter if we have a tsunami that washes away the whole country. Well, that's true. Don't be a putz. You know who else responded to the question, is Obama Muslim? With, he says he's a Christian, I take him at his word. Hillary Clinton during the 08 primaries. C'est vrai. And you know what? I am sure there is a small percentage of those Tea Partiers who are former Pumas. There's no doubt in my mind. Kevin, 11721 members only should be called the Champagne Room. Get a real clear sense of what the life experience of my IONers are. Spay F. The bottom line is every minute of Sam Cedar is a pure quality product. I wish I could argue with that. Defeatocrat. Graphic artist here. I'm art director and lead designer at Soaps in Depth, a weekly soap opera fan magazine. Lucky so far, but soaps are dropping like flies. Cross your fingers for me. You know what you got to do is you got to broaden what your definition of soap opera is. Right? I mean, why not, what's that one on HBO?
Big Love?
Empire Border. Yeah, just start picking up other shows.
Gossip Girl, that's basically a soap opera.
Somebody's watching TV at that same time. Just start covering that stuff. You're not in charge of that. I know. Super Funk. Superfunk. Superfunk. Also, great graphic artist. You liked Superfunk stuff, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's good stuff.
A lot stuck with me from that video of Jeffrey Sachs on Bloomberg you went over with yesterday. When the doomsday scenario comes from someone so reasonable, that is truly scary. I'm about to stock up on some ammo and watch Red Dawn. Yeah, when's that coming out?
The new one?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll check that out.
I may
it's
be.
A good question.
You know what would be great? To go with a video camera and see if people have lined up.
But, you know, I mean, I like that movie. I never, you know.
I love that movie.
It's a great movie.
I've watched that many times. And then I got to meet, what's his face? Well, I'll save it for Friday, but remind me. I think I told that story. Is Robert Reich the only person proposing going back to a real progressive tax system? Is this considered to be ultra left wing? There is no ultra, yes. Robert Reich would be considered like an absolute, you know, the way that our politics are now, that if you lifted up a Reich shirt, he would almost be obligated to have like a tattoo of Che Guevara or Chairman Mao. Maxercise, the posterior. What are you going to do? You send me that every week? That was my cat. Good typist, but uninspired. Uncle Jeb, 1861. Members are the only source of revenue. What about George Soros, the puppet master? Say nothing.
Say nothing. The woods are dark and deep. You have many miles to go before you sleep, Uncle Jeb.
Says Red Dawn's supposed to be out this year.
Yeah. I'm waiting. Chinese are behind it. They're trying to stop it.
I don't recognize anybody that's in the cast. Not a name.
I'm trying to get money from George Soros, but I mean, not really. But I would love to get sponsored by some big entity. Why not call it the after party? Meh. Jay Shivo, I said champagne room last week. All right, so you're all good. You're all sick. Neffer, soundboard is loud and good. Voice is what I cannot hear. What? I don't know what the difference between that is. Oh. You can hear the 360, but you cannot hear the voice.
Everything should be coming through strong on our end. If more people are having that problem.
Oh, you know what it sounds like to me? Maybe you've got your one speaker down. Maybe you've got a Miss Mac, Mitch, Max, Mick. Your mix, right? Am I coming through stereo? Am I on one channel or am I on both?
You should be equivalently panned to each channel.
I know, so. I should be. the problem is, says Pluger, the R in majority report could certainly be made to look like a keyhole. The problem with Obama is that aside from not solving problems, Obama is destroying the Democratic brand. Yes, I agree. See polls showing Republicans more trust on Social Security. Valid point on SCOTUS, though, and Fed Judiciary as well. Yeah. Now, I agree with you. I agree with you. That's why I've actually said that the one guy I would actually consider, sadly, if voting for opposed, you know, as opposed to Obama, would not be a Democrat, would be Bloomberg. Because Bloomberg is actually more liberal on some aspects than Obama. Equally as corporatist on others, but doesn't have the wouldn't destroy the Democratic Party, particularly when it came to something like Social Security. But hopefully Obama is not going there on Social Security. Hopefully. Maybe the members' logo is an animated GIF that morphs it from Janine's wink into a shirtless Sam with Shameless Lib lipstick sticked across his chest. Somebody's got a little more time.
Somebody's been thinking about that one.
Snuck away from Treasure Valley Scout Camp to see Red Dawn, says Heathen Steven. Narcotu, Robert Reich posted on HuffPost that the way to get out of... forget the revolution. Executive branch has set the precedent that it doesn't have to follow the laws. Laws don't matter. Constitution doesn't matter. The authorities will... do whatever the people permit. Right. Robert Reich gets posted on HuffPo that the way to get out of the recession was to cut taxes along progressive lines, but that still perpetuates the myth that taxes are an important to economic impediment to economic recovery rather than a driver of it. I agree. Well, look, there is an argument that if you give tax cuts to people in the bottom half of the income distribution spectrum, it will be stimulative. It's not, it won't have the same multiplier effect as something like unemployment insurance, because one is putting cash into people's hands that they perceive, well, A, they need it more than just anybody who gets a tax cut because they have no source of income. And they turn around, they spend that money immediately. And it has a multiplier effect. So when I give Evan a dollar, he goes and he spends that dollar at the dollar pizza place. And the dollar pizza place pays those guys, and they go and spend. And so there's a multiplier effect. If Evan gives me a dollar, I am so flush with cash that I don't bother spending that dollar. I go and invest it. I invest it in, not in equipment here, but because I'm so flush with cash, I go and invest it in, I short, you know, some mortgage derivatives, some mortgage securities that I know are bad. So I go and short those to make some more money. And then you know what I do with that money? I put that in another account. Hey, Sam, aren't you paying commission on that? Yeah, maybe a little bit of commission. But you know what that broker does with that commission? He invests the money. It just doesn't, it doesn't have the same effect in the, it just doesn't. Robert Reich posted on HuffPost, the way to, Zach Punk. The question is Obama destroying the Democratic brand more than Republicans are destroying the Republican brand? Are there any brands left? Well, no, I think Obama is probably not, although the Social Security thing is very disturbing. We'll see what happens. Don't be a putz. Have you seen Rules of Engagement written by Senator Jim Webb? One of the sleaziest pieces of anti-Arab propaganda ever produced. No, I haven't. Delta Dave, why wouldn't Russ Feingold be a great pick for the next Supreme Court justice? You know what? He would. Too many Jews on the court. Too many Jews, 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 Jews. Jay Shivmon. Let's see. If we wait long enough, James Franco will be in Red Dawn. I don't know if I get that.
He's buying, his people are buying up everything. I mean, I think they bought the rights to a Three's Company movie now. I mean, he's everywhere. That's probably what they mean.
S-R-A-H-E says, voice sound is low here, too. 360 is normal. Interesting. Taurusy. It's time to finally lay to rest, and most Americans are eager to promote democracy around the world. Pew poll conducted in November 2009. 21% of Americans said promoting democracy abroad should be top priority for U.S. foreign policy, ranking at last of 11 goals. That's what a good war will do for you. Still rocking, still rocking VA. I love you, Sam, but I have to admit, there is a mumbling, low-talking situation. I'm listening on Bose speakers cranked up, and it's hard to understand you much of the time.
That's very strange. I'll fix it. I'll put more gain in the post.
Is that always?
Is that always the case, or just today? Fracklin-tilliny. Nothing is as stimulative as R&D. Nothing. We spent $118 to create the entire internet and help billions of people and made trillions of dollars. Fractal. 11 billion is like what? 3 weeks of Iraq, Afghanistan, 11 billion, Sam, 11 billion. Yes, I'm sorry. 11 billion to create the entire internet. It's true. But, you know, it's going to take, you can't always, to be fair, but your point is well taken, and it's certainly paid for all bets, but it's not like when you do R&D, you're like, hey, let's just spend the money on the thing that's going to be really a success. For every 11 billions that, you know, for everything that you fund that is successful, there's 10 things that are not, maybe 20. But you're right. It pays off all the bets. Right. Even if we spent 100 times that, it still paid off big time. I agree. But it's not as stimulative in the short run. It's not as stimulative in the short run. And that's what we need. We need jobs. Short-run jobs. Long-term investment in R&D, I agree. Nosing Tiro, what's it like seeing your once stepchild, Marin, kick your ass daily? Well, first off, his show's not daily. But I guess you could also argue that his podcasts, actually, probably even when they're not released daily, do better than ours. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I would guess. If he's really doing 500,000 downloads a week, 100,000 a day, well, I guess it's closer to 80,000 a day, but still. And I am honored that you you perceived him once as being my stepchild. Because Marin is significantly older than I am. And I am quite convinced by the time that I reach his age, if I'm still alive at that time, that I will be doing as well as he is. So I guess the answer is it gives me hope. Still rocking Eva. Marin's good, but in no way kicking your ass. Oh, thank you. Never. See if he just believed me the first time about the sound. FYI, the camera shakes and sways in its new position. Tell Evan to sit still. Pluger, stimulus. Big problem is that Keynesian stimulus doesn't have the return it used to since we've lost our manufacturing base. There's some truth to that. But the other problem is that people don't even believe in Keynes anymore, it seems. Zach Punk says, strange, you're coming in very strong on my end. That's audio-wise. Content-wise, well, you're doing your best.
Well, I upped the gain all around, so hopefully everyone will be happy.
Nosing Stromo, haha, excellent. Jimmy Reefer Cake, nice job with Marin. I only wish you guys would have milked the Gallagher a bit more. I liked how Marin basically admitted it was just because Gallagher was an asshole. And we made some news. I got him to, he told that story about Stewart on, was it on the Louis C.K.?
I think so.
Yeah, on the Louis C.K. podcast. And we broke that wide open, man. I just figured I'd play the breaking news. I should have played that when Marin was on. He wouldn't have heard it. Cool, J146, I can hear you fine. All right, folks, we shall see you tomorrow. Tomorrow on the program, not sure who we'll have on tomorrow, but of course it will be a lot of fun. Members, keep your eyes open for an email. And folks, help us get the word out with the show. We're going to be going to a 40-minute format for freebies. So that will put us right, I think, in the perfect zone for podcasters who are sort of casual listeners. That's my theory anyways. We'll see. It's the beauty of this program. We don't. The theory doesn't work out, and we just change it. I'm still rocking in Virginia. All right, folks. See you tomorrow. I get somewhere lost but dry.